Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Roger Nober, Chairman of the Surface Transportation Board. And joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel. Roger, in the last segment, you were talking about working with the various stakeholders through different situations. And I'm curious, what are the lessons learned you've had from that experience?
Well, I found in my time on Capitol Hill and at DOT and now at the agency, it's most important when dealing with stakeholders to be fair and give them confidence that you're treating them with respect, listening to what they have to say, and, you know, giving consideration to the perspectives that people bring. You don't have to agree with people all the time, but you have to be respectful of their positions and why they're doing it. I think in Washington, 99% of the people who are here and who are involved in policy, either from, you know, the private sector side or the lobbying side or from the government side, are here because they want to do the right thing and they believe in what they're doing or are representing a perspective. And, you know, I've not agreed with a lot of people, but I found that if you're straight and you explain to them what you're doing and why you're doing it and why you agree or disagree with their position, people will respect that and feel you have personal integrity. And if you give people respect in what they do and what they say, then, you know, they'll repay that. Even people for whom, when I was on Capitol Hill, I disagreed with and whose policy ideas and initiatives we worked hard to see stopped, were very supportive of my nomination because I think they always felt that I treated them with respect and you know, heard, listened to what they had to say, didn't always agree with it, but nobody expects you to agree with them. What they expect you to do is to treat them fairly. And, you know, I'm a big believer in that. When in our process now, it's very important to me that we give the sides and the different parties and perspectives full care and respect and not, you know, not to be snide or in any way, you know, disrespect the folks who are bringing a perspective. That's not to say we're going to agree with them or that their arguments are going to always be persuasive, but we're going to be fair and we're going to listen, and you know, we'll do the right thing. And I've never met anybody who begrudged anybody, any decision maker, doing what they thought was right.
Roger, we live in a different world than we lived in a couple years ago, and our world has become increasingly security conscious. It's affected every mode of transportation. We've had a number of conversations on this program about the impact of security on a number of different modes of transportation. Can you help us understand a little bit what the impact of our new security consciousness has had on the freight rail transportation?
Well, sure. Security is very important to me. I was actually sitting in breakfast with Secretary Mineta and Administrator Garvey of the FAA when the World Trade Center attack occurred, and spent much of the next year at DOT working on security matters. So I have a personal interest in ensuring security. At the STB, we have, you know, we both try to work with the railroads to ensure that security is a function of what they do. And I think that they have, as an industry, they have really taken proactive steps to impose security measures on their far-flung networks. And so I applaud them for the efforts that they do. I've spent a lot of time with the American Association of Railroads and their security folks to understand what they're doing. And then at a personal level, I've taken a great number of steps to ensure our agencies safety, to look at the threats that are faced to us where we're located, and to try to evaluate them and to take steps to impose security measures for our employees. It's difficult because many of our employees have spouses who work for other agencies, and not everybody does things the same way. But, you know, to me, ensuring that we have space to operate if we can't be in our offices in downtown Washington, we have a business continuity plan for continuing on with regulatory approvals if there's a security emergency. You know, I've gotten a secure telephone unit to be able to coordinate with the Federal Railroad Administration and DOT and the railroads on security measures. And, you know, it's hard to predict what kinds of things might happen in the future, but to me, being mindful of that extraordinary security events might require us to take extraordinary steps in the future is important.
Now, security is just one part of the change in the industry and one component of what we'll see in the future. Two questions for you. I want to talk a little bit about the future of the freight rail industry. I want to talk a little bit about what you see for the future of the board. Let's start with the industry at first. What, over the course of the next 5 years, what type of changes do you see, and how does the future look for freight rail transportation?
Well, I think the future is bright for freight rail transportation in general, but I think our agency I think that there are changes from what our agency has traditionally done. Over the past 15 or 20 years, we've been looking at first deregulating and then consolidation. And I think consolidation is either near an end or coming to an end. There's four railroads now. We could, you know, really only get down to two. So there is a limited amount of consolidation that can occur. Then in the future, when we have fewer, larger railroads, the challenges will be as we've talked a lot about today, rates and services. People don't like the way the railroad is treating them. They're captive to the railroad. They need to have a place to try to get their concerns addressed. So we need to have our resources go into addressing rate and service concerns rather than mergers and consolidations and oversight. I think you see that by the fact that we have, you know, 12 or 13 rate cases as opposed to 2 or 3. That it's rates and service that are the future, and so that's where I'm trying to put resources into and the kinds of matters that our board has to focus on more in the future. Consumer protection will be a big issue, and we're going to want to try to put more resources into that. You know, again, all of these are informal matters, if you will. And finally, environmental review is a place where there's increasingly companies want to cut their transportation costs by building new and competitive rail lines. We approve those, and they're getting more and more controversial and difficult, so we need to have more resources there. So, you know, I look at the future very carefully and try to make sure that our agency adapts to it.
One of the things that we've seen through the Department of Transportation is the importance of intermodalism moving forward. What's the impact of intermodalism on freight rail transportation? Is it a positive? Is it a negative? And how will that impact the industry as we move forward?
Beyond a positive, it's an imperative. As I said, you know, I just heard yesterday that the single largest commodity group that freight rail carries is intermodal traffic. So, like it or not, the market is pushing railroads to be, you know, intermodal partners. Traditionally, railroads and trucking companies have competed with one another. But right now, trucking companies are the single largest customer of the railroads. So their competitors are both competitors and customers at the same time. And that's because customers don't care how things get to them. They want things to move as smoothly and as efficiently as possible. And if it's on a truck, if it's on a railroad, if it's on an ocean liner, they by and large don't care. And it's up to the transportation marketplace to provide the best service to the customer. And freight roads are an integral part of that. So I think that they'll grow and they'll prosper and they'll compete. And, you know, they'll have all the fits and starts that have gone along with it. But I see them as being a growing and more important part of our network.
Roger, you've had some interesting challenges in your career and you've moved in some very interesting circles. What advice would you have for a person interested in a career in public service?
Well, first of all, I would encourage people to pursue it. I've been in the public since I graduated from school now 14 years ago, I've been in the public sector for all but 18 months of that. I've had some, I think unique experiences in the public sector on Capitol Hill and at DOT and now at the agency, and I wouldn't trade them for anything. And part of that was because I put, you know, what I thought was interesting and what I liked first, and, you know, I worried about money second. And at some point, you know, we'll all have to worry about that. But to me, I think that the rewards of a public sector career have been, you know, just beyond, you know, anything that can be quantified. So I would encourage anyone who's interested in government to pursue it. I've never met a person whose career was worse off for spending some time in the government than if they hadn't, because it gives you a perspective and an understanding that if you deal with anything that's regulated is absolutely imperative. And I think most people are there for good. I would encourage people to, you know, to think about what kinds of things they want to do and to do what they like. I mean, I've always pursued what I enjoyed doing, and that has, you know, led to, as we talked about today, a series of events that could never have been predicted, but I think have been, you know, pretty remarkable. I've been very fortunate to have been able to do. You know, our agency, as I said before, has an older profile, because when we were eliminated, many of the existing younger people who had less service had to go. And I've made hiring new people a priority, and we've been able to get some excellent people to join us, and I feel very fortunate that we've been able to get them. And I've made that a top priority for myself, of bringing on new folks to the agency. You know, I love transportation, and I love the government, and I hope to be able to share that a little bit with other people. And, you know, there are a lot of benefits to it, and you can do good, and you can have a lot of responsibility early. And if you have a young family like I do, you can even spend a little time with them. So, you know, I strongly encourage people who are interested in government to, you know, figure out what it is that they would want to do, and, you know, let the money take care of itself. It always seems to.
That'll have to be our last question, Roger. David, I want to thank you very much for joining us and fitting us in your busy schedule.
Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate the opportunity to come here.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Roger Nober, Chairman of the Surface Transportation Board. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and research and get a transcript of today's fascinating conversation. Once again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.